Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Conservationist Conversationalist. I am Brandon Anyert.
And I am Aiden Wood.
How's it going, Aiden?
It's going.
It is going. It is, we're on the train to September.
A train to September. That's interesting. You conceptualize time as a train.
Yeah. Have you stopped this train? That's a John Mayer song. Breakdown. That's a need this train to break down. That's a Jack Johnson song.
I am uncultured. Those are country artists, right?
No. John Mayer is one of the best rock guitarists of all time.
John Denver.
Oh, John Denver. He wasn't really country. John Denver was like folk Americana.
That's the most pretentious shit you've ever said on this show.
He's folk Americana. Because you're going off of his one song, Thank God I'm a Country Boy. He also had Annie's song.
Of the Almost Heaven, West Virginia.
That's
Shenandoah River.
Oh, that's Country Road. That's Country Roads Take Me Home. So okay, there's two country name, two songs he has with country in them. Yes, that's true. But I'm familiar with, like, Annie's song and
so something about a train going into September.
Yeah, that's what we were. Now we're on to John Denver. Okay. So John Mayer, and then who else? I say Jack Johnson. He's from Hawaii. He plays ukulele and acoustic guitar and probably electric too. So we're headed for September, which means we've got a debate coming up in a little bit, but that's, we're gonna, you know, we got plenty of time to talk about that coming up. But that's crazy that we thought after July debates, we thought, oh, we gotta wait till September, and look where we are. Mm-hmm. But we're gonna be missing a few people.
We are, and apparently the DNC is considering upping their requirements. They're upping their polling requirements to 4% of the poll, which people aren't happy about because they were like, we weren't told about this. Like, you can't just change the rules on us. And it's like, also, like, we've got, like, what, 7 other debates after this one?
Right.
It's like, we can increase the poll requirements for those, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, look, we know it's coming down to 3 people, but it's like, we might as well at least give some of the other candidates a chance in September to give their spiel, get it done with, and then I feel like you're getting down to the nitty-gritty. Like, you're going to have the 3 top contenders, and you're going to have Kamala Harris and Cory Booker. And then that's, like, it.
I mean, I really do think that, like we've had a few too many candidates because of, you know, like the surplus of, like, white male moderates who just sort of want to be there to be there.
Yeah.
But I do think that there are a lot of people in here who are contributing valuable ideas.
100%.
And I think that the presence of a large field, but not a too large field, I think the presence of a large field, like, gives the opportunity to have, like, a variety of people bring diverse discussions.
Yes.
And, like, to bring things that, like, to address issues that maybe, like, if it was just, like, 2 main contenders, wouldn't be addressed, you know?
Right.
Yang with UBI and automation, and Inslee with climate change.
Right.
I think that, and, like, the reparations debate, like, I legitimately do not think, like, if we had just had, like, Biden, Warren, and Bernie from the beginning, I don't think that, like, reparations would be on the table right now, but people have been bringing that into the conversation, and I think it's valuable to have these ideas. It's been a little too bloated to the point where, like, if anybody wants to be noticed, they have to be, like, just, like, get a reaction, which is, I think, counterproductive. And I think that, like, I think that the way that their debate's going to go, I think that it has the opportunity to be really valuable.
Well, and it's interesting because when you think about some of these guys, that's where it got crazy, right? Because we were joking before we started recording that Seth Moulton, we didn't even know who that was, and he dropped out this week, right?
And so, we talked about him before on the show, probably.
Did we? Probably.
I'm assuming so. And I remembered, I relearned who he was a few days ago. And also, like, somebody said Seth Moulton dropped out. It's coming back to me now. Someone said Seth Moulton dropped out, and I was like, who's Seth Moulton? And they, like, said he was one of the candidates, and I was like, I don't even know who he was. And then, like, I forgot that, and then today, we were talking about what we should talk about the show, and Brandon was like, you know, Seth Moulton dropped out, we could mention that, and I was like, who's Seth Moulton?
Yeah, I mean, I got like, I think two text messages, Seth Moulton dropped out, and I'm like, Seth, who's Seth, what did he drop out of? That's where it got crazy, right? And, like, and then you have, you know, you mentioned Andrew Yang with UBI. It's funny because I liked Andrew in the beginning, and he's progressively, amazingly, even the more I hear, the more some people hear, the more they like him. The more I've heard, the more I'm just like, you're a libertarian, dude, shut up.
Both of my younger brothers are hashtag Yang gang.
Really?
Yeah. One of my brothers is, like, he's a centrist. Like, I hate to say it, but he's like a centrist.
It's a free country.
He was like, I don't like John Delaney, but when he talked about wishlist politics, I really appreciated that. And it's like, okay, dude. Like, he's very anti-Bernie, but he's okay with Warren, so.
See, that's weird to me, though, because, like, I mean, like, the difference between Warren and Bernie is that Warren is going to, like, give us tea while she changes the world, and Bernie
I don't think Warren's going to do that. I think you're stereotyping her as, like, a 7-year-old.
No, I'm just saying
open a beer and, like...
Okay, right, she has the beer thing.
And then she's gonna slam it back down and say, like, and another thing, like, and, like...
Yeah, no, that's fair. But what I was trying to evoke was the fact that Bernie is all about burning shit down and just, like, to cinders, and then, poosh, and then, okay, we're gonna restart. Whereas I think Elizabeth Warren is not the burn it all down type. She is a little bit more pragmatic about it. But, I mean, but essentially they are similar politicians if you're going by the scale of how far left and center they are in the United
States. Absolutely, yeah. Right. I think that, honestly, I'm guessing that a big part of the reason that he doesn't like Bernie is just because Bernie's tone. I think that, like, Bernie's accent, like, the way he talks, like, he comes off, like, a little, like, kooky sometimes. And, like the actual content of, like, his ideas are really valuable. Then the other thing is he worked on the Hillary Clinton campaign and other, like, more moderate Democrats in 2016. And I think that he's still pissed at Bernie for, like...
Even though more Bernie supporters voted for Hillary than Hillary supporters voted for Obama. Yeah. But
I mean, there's a lot of Hillary supporters who are bitter that Bernie, like, ran at all. Like, despite the fact that, like I said, like, earlier, like, having more people run, like, gives the opportunity for valuable discussions to be entered into our discourse. Despite the fact that so many people felt represented by Bernie, and he pushed the party in a much more progressive, like, direction. Like, and there's, like, no evidence to support the fact that Bernie's candidacy cost Hillary the election. There's zero evidence to support that fact.
Yeah. No,
sorry, continue.
No, I was just going to say, sorry, I didn't want to mean to interrupt you. But no, I mean, what if you go back to what happened to Hillary's, you know, there was two things. She was done wrong by Russian interference. There's no question there.
Yeah.
But on top of that, Hillary also did herself in. And the more people are willing to recognize that is that she, not by her being her, she was far more intelligent than Trump. We know that. Far more qualified than Trump. We know that. Not even a question. The problem was that she thought she had blue states that have been blue for a long time, and she felt that it was more necessary to go to states that where she knew the money was than it was to go to these Rust Belt states where she thought, heck, Michigan's going to stay blue, Pennsylvania's going to stay blue, and that's where she lost. It's where she lost to Bernie, and she didn't even see the warning signs when Bernie beat her out of the blue. No pun intended.
And both of my younger brothers voted. Actually, no, my younger brothers were so certain that Hillary would win the primary in Michigan that they voted for John Kasich. They voted in the Republican primary because we had open voting. I was sitting here in California. I can't vote anyways. And then I got the news. I was like, thank you, guys. I appreciate that. Because they wanted, to, like, support, like, any alternative to Trump in the Republican Party.
Right. No, I get that. Yeah. See, like, whereas I was – see, we had a caucus. Now we're changing this year. We have a primary this year. So we had a caucus, and I was, you know, I mean, no, you know, getting around it here. People who have listened from the start, they know that I am not a Hillary fan at all. And I was, you know, very much a Bernie supporter, and I caucused for him. I was named a delegate. And I, you know, will admit that I even voted for him in the presidency. And that was, and
you voted in 2016 for Bernie?
I certainly did. Oh, and, my God. And the thing is that I live in Washington, and I knew that I could. And so, you know, that was, and that's a terrible way to think about it. I get it, but I could not for the life of me vote for Hillary Clinton.
So you're one of the people that, like, Hillary Clinton supporters dislike. You're, like, one of the right.
Absolutely, 100%. And the saddest part is that I actually, and the worst part is that nobody would ever believe me, I so badly would love to see a female president, and that makes me look like the absolute idiot who would do anything not to vote for a female president.
The thing about Hillary Clinton is
but
that
I just can't stand her.
Well, I think that she's a good candidate. I think that she's, like, a smart person. I think that she has an issue. Like, the thing that people were, like, supportive of Hillary for, which is that she has so much experience in so many different areas, I think that that's, in some people's eyes, is what worked against her, not because they hate an overqualified woman, but because having a really long history of being in the public eye and being in public service means you also have a very long record that people can look to and point to and say, like, yeah, you fucked up here, you fucked up here, you fucked up here. It's the same. It's worked against Hillary Clinton. It's the same thing that's going to work against Joe Biden. It'll work against Kamala Harris. It did in the last debates when Tulsi Gabbard crushed her under her heel. Oh my God, like a fucking snake. Oh my God.
Well, and I'll kind of be honest with you. So this is kind of the trajectory if you're going by a little bit of like Brandon's history and politics, right? So I was a gigantic Obama fan, right? And I caucused for him as well and against Hillary. But during that time when Obama was, you know, where I started to, we talked about it last, we don't have to go over that again, but you know how Obama, it's really tough to be president, okay? And there were things that even I disagreed with Obama. And there was somebody during that time who rose to prominence. She was already doing a lot of things in the Senate, but somebody who rose to prominence during a lot of the Senate hearings, and that was Elizabeth Warren. And I was a huge fan of Elizabeth Warren. A lot of people called her crazy at the time because she was somebody who would get up there and stand for what she believed in. And she did it. People forget. She did that long before Bernie did. And I was a huge, huge fan of Elizabeth Warren's, and I still am. The thing was, is the reason why Bernie caught, I think, fire with a lot of us is that when you saw Hillary, she was somebody who had the vote, and it's really, really, and I'll say this now, and I can take a lot of flack for it, and I hope people understand what I'm trying to say. So I totally understand the privilege that I come from, right? That being said, so it's hard for me to judge who's better for somebody else, right? But I watched as Bernie said things, because I've watched white people be terrible to, and straight white people be terrible to LGBTQ and to minorities. And I realize that I only have so much that I can say because I come from that place of privilege. But I saw Hillary, you know, we saw the problems with her and Bill when it came to incarceration of minorities. Mm-hmm. We saw the fact that it took her a while. I understand people can change, but it took her a while to come around with the LGBTQ plus community. And I think the reason why Bernie struck such a chord with me is because I saw somebody who came in and basically, you know, double flip off and was like, fuck all y'all. I'm, you know, I have been for civil rights since this time. I have been through, been with the LGBTQ plus community for this amount of time. And I thought, finally, because everybody lets the generational thing become an argument. They go, oh, well, they're from this era. That's why they don't understand, right? They don't understand. That's why they speak that, you know, older people say things that we cringe at. But Bernie wasn't like that. Bernie came out and he was somebody who was getting arrested when there were these things going on. I think that's why Bernie struck such a chord with me and why he even rose to a higher level than Elizabeth did. Because I was an Elizabeth Warren fan before I was a Bernie Sanders fan. Mm-hmm. And I love both of them, by the way. I'm excited that hopefully they will both, one of them will be Biden and we will get to vote for either of them. And that's so exciting for me. But anyways, yeah, so there's my spiel.
Yeah. How do we get on this topic? And what's the next topic?
Well, we were talking about the fact that Seth Moulton dropped out, and that's what.
Oh, yeah. Already gone from my memory. Maybe we could try again and try and be relevant before 2024.
So and you mentioned while you were talking too, that you said that of course Jay Inslee brought something to the table though, which was climate change. Now Jay Inslee has dropped out. By the way, I will say side note here, The Onion had a hilarious article where they said that, Jay Inslee turned into a tree and he said, and he retweeted it with a quote and said, something along the lines of that was a good stump speech. So, you know, good one, Jay, good dad joke. But Jay, I think, you know, he's going to be running for governor again. And I think a lot of us here in Washington, even though I think he has a lot of work to do environmentally, he's a good talker and hasn't necessarily got as much done as we'd like to see him get done. But I think we're all very happy to, you know, to obviously vote for him again as governor. But he is gone. So yeah. RIP Jay Inslee's presidential campaign.
And it was really interesting to see like the difference between like Washington voters and their support of Jay Inslee versus Colorado voters and their like just sort of like shame at Hickenlooper. almost every Colorado person I talked to is like, I don't know why he's doing this. Like, I think he should just stop.
John like, Hickenlooper.
All of the Washington voters are like, ooh, Daddy Inslee. You go.
I'm actually looking it up right now because you sent this great picture to me. The Oops No Supporters Hickenlooper's cereal. And This picture, that, oh my God, I should post it on our Instagram, like on our story or whatever. So if people who haven't seen it, I believe it says even he doesn't think he ever had a shot. Product enlarged to show detail. Okay, that was just a, they paid attention to detail. Very good at the person who did that graphic. But yeah, so Hickenlooper, he's gone. Jay Inslee's gone. Seth Moulton's gone. Seth Moulton, was he a reality TV show contestant on like The Bachelor or something? I don't know. I don't know who the hell he was.
Okay, now that you said that, I need to actually look it up.
Yeah, because I don't know. Like, the name sounds... What was that?
Were you just making a funny joke? Like, or did you, do you actually...
No, like, legitimately, I don't think he's from The Bachelor, but legitimately, I don't, like, I don't... his name doesn't sound like it goes with politics. I feel like he was, like, a business person or, like, a personality of some sort.
I just looked up a photo of him, and he doesn't look like I thought he would look like. He looks like...
Okay.
I was expecting like Michael Bennett, but smaller and rounder. And he looks like Michael Bennett, but like bigger and flatter.
Okay.
He looks like his head is very square.
I'm going to look up Seth Moulton now that you've done this. So Seth Moulton, though, I think the reason why we're all thinking that he's not I just put Moulton. Why we're thinking he's not a politician is because of the fact we were talking about Seth Rogen before.
Yes, we were.
Yeah. And so Seth Rogen. So yeah, he is. Liz Boardman is his spouse. Lizzie Boardman. So we're left with this is where it gets interesting, right? Okay. Away from the mediocre middle ground white guys who have dropped out. So where it gets interesting is now the newest poll that's come out, and it's Monmouth, and of course Joe Biden's camp says, oh, it's skewed one way or the other. But this poll has him now a percentage point below Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, who are tied at 19%, and he's at 18%, which shows the field getting very close if you go by that poll. And I realize that every poll is different, but that's interesting because we all know that, because we can go through Biden's gaffes over, like, we haven't talked about it in the last few weeks, but it's actually pretty bad. It's not like it's even like, oh, funny to talk about. Like, he confused New Hampshire and Vermont and also confused Burlington, Iowa and Burlington, New Hampshire. And I mean, like, the dude, and then when people are putting, his camp had to tell people, trust us, Joe Biden's not nuts. When you have to say that, that's like bad news.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's okay if you're like the Republican Party and like this is a cult of personality where it doesn't matter if you're like,
yeah,
rally behind them because you just want somebody to rally behind. Like I feel like Democrats, especially when we have so many other like candidates who have actually inspired us and who we actually want. I mean, like, I just think that like it's hard to avoid criticism, and like I think we mentioned this last time, but like Joe Biden looked so, he like, didn't he like announce at the last debates, like in his opening statements, like, go easy on me, guys?
Or yeah, I mean,
and then people were attacking him and he looked so crestfallen.
No, I mean, and also when you hear that his camp has said we're going to limit the amount of appearances he makes, I mean, that right there says we're really scared the old man's going to say something nutty. And so we're going to, you know, we're going to keep it quiet. And, so I don't think it's so crazy to think that even though he obviously has that name recognition and he keeps on, you know, and by the way, I don't know if you know this, but he was vice president for Barack Obama, and he knows Barack Obama. And so when you look at all that, I don't think it's too hard to believe that he is a percentage point now below, or essentially if we even want to give a room for error, he's in a three-way tie for the presidency with Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. I think that makes complete sense over what we've seen in the last few weeks, because Bernie has made some huge, huge gains in stuff that he's talked about. And Elizabeth Warren is drawing crowds that are incredible, that aren't getting covered, by the way, at all, except for on the internet. You're seeing people, I know friends, a bunch of my friends are taking pictures with her. Like, they are a lot of friends. She is creating way more momentum than anybody realizes, and it's not getting covered because I didn't see it on the news. Mm-hmm. I don't even see it that much on Young Turks, which is a very progressive media outlet, because they are very much Bernie fans, and I get that. I'm a Bernie fan too, but you have to cover the fact that Elizabeth Warren is drawing huge crowds, and she has a lot of people, especially she's actually, in my opinion, I've seen her get more of female voters, progressive voters, than Hillary did, in the sense of that who are saying, look, we love this woman and what she has to say. And so I think Elizabeth is pulling out to a lead, in my opinion, if I'm the way I'm seeing it from my own eyes. And I think Bernie will definitely surge too as we get closer to the new year.
And actually, like, I don't know if you saw, like, this particular poll, but this just came out today. I'm reading an article from the New York Times. A new national poll suggests that the race for the 2020 Democratic presidential nomination may be tightening, with a virtual three-way tie among former Vice President... Joseph R. Biden Jr. and two more progressive rivals, Senators Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Despite the dead heat, Mr. Sanders and Ms. Warren, each with 20% support among Democratic voters, and Mr. Biden with 19%. The Monmouth University poll released Monday may hint at a concerning trend for the candidacy of Mr. Biden, the poll's previous frontrunner, whose support declined from 32% when the Monmouth poll was taken in June. That's a 12% slide in June, July, in two months. Oh, my God. Yeah.
And it goes along with what we've watched, right? I mean, so that's the thing that I think is also important to note, that where we've seen Joe slip and we've seen Elizabeth and Bernie keep climbing. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it makes sense for people to say that this is like some sort of like skewed poll. Like, you're not watching shit then, people, you know? I mean, and the way that I see it too is that I look at when you look at the fact that people too, like for the one, because when you brought up John Delaney earlier, right? And the fact that, you know, because some people can see some good in him, because I can't. I think that Medicare for All is a subject because it strikes a real chord with me. And I think that that's something people are also not taking into account how important that is. And obviously the two, if we're going to call them front runners right now, if Joe has slid, the two front runners, isn't it? Kind of, doesn't it, when you look at how the support for Medicare down the line, with the exception of Joe Biden thrown in the middle of, because I would say Kamala and Cory are probably more like in the middle between Joe and Sanders and Warren. But when you look at the support of Medicare for All amongst the candidates, and then you look at their percentage that they have right now down the line, it kind of actually goes along with it a little bit. And I don't think people understand how big of an importance that is here in the United States. And the reason why I think John Delaney is pure evil. And that's because I think that when you list off that that when you still talk about things like wanting to have like a public option, and then on top of that, people can still get their own. That's basically saying we still want people who are poor to get treatment that is just subpar because they can't afford better treatment. But if you make more money, you can get treatment that's better. And I've said this a million times. I'll say it again until it gets through people's heads. We should not be dealt health insurance the way we're dealt cell phone plans. That's disgusting. This is health, not cell phones. And I think people aren't taking that into account when they look at where these candidates stand on that, because it has been a really, really important issue. And Joe Biden just goes, yeah, well, I did a miracle, or you know, Obamacare, but what do they call it now? Because they've gone away from Obamacare. Jeez, I'm having a brain freeze. Affordable Care Act. There we go. Affordable Care Act.
That's the actual name of the bill. Obamacare is just the trendy thing.
That's what I meant. Yeah. And so the Affordable Care Act, you know, that's what Biden goes back to, you know, I help with the Affordable Care Act. And like, yeah, dude, we get it. Like, you know, good on you, man. You were there with Obama. So anyway, so that's where we're at with the three-way tie, if you want to call it that, for the Democratic nomination. And you've got, I believe I'm not right, Kamala and Cory are right behind them, I think. I think with both, like, they're barely making that cut if we're talking about 4%, because I think Kamala had 8 and Cory had 4 or something like that. I could be wrong. But, so, you know, they're way behind those three frontrunners.
Yeah.
And then you got Marianne Williamson.
Less than 1%, $3.1 million.
But she will be there in September, right? Unless they do a lot of...
Not as of August 23rd, which is the last time this New York Times interactive article was updated. Julian Castro will be. Amy Klobuchar, Andrew Yang, Beto O'Rourke, Cory Booker, Buttigieg, Harris, Sanders, Warren, and of course, Biden.
Are we surprised that Beto O'Rourke is still potentially in a debate, or is that, I mean, or does he still have enough of that name recognition to carry him along? Because that surprised me, because he's been so non-existent in the first two of the debates.
I mean, like, I think so. I think that also, like, he has so much support, like, in Texas. Yeah, and then his, like, name recognition. Yeah, sorry, I have like, a lot of ants in my room right now, and there's, like, an ant that's trying to crawl my leg. I'm just going to low-key blow it off.
It's okay. I'll segue us into the so before we get into the really devastating news we've had going on the last 2 weeks, we will talk about the fact that, of course, it's hurricane season.
Your audio went out. So oh. Now I have to be entertaining and talk.
Am I back?
Oh, the ant died.
Am I back? Can you hear me?
I just want to get you off my leg. It's, like, tangled up in my leg hair. It's so gross.
Am I back?
And his audio still isn't working. Oh, my God. I just inflicted
this. Am I back?
You're back.
Oh, my
okay.
Gosh.
That's the answer.
Sorry, everybody. So that's so weird. It was working so good. I had an interview earlier today, and it went so good. What? Why does it do this? So anyways, so as I was saying, it's hurricane season. And that was my segue. It's hurricane season. And Trump supposedly suggested in a closed-door meeting that we should go and nuke a hurricane, or we could try to nuke a hurricane, and that would disrupt it enough that we might not, that the hurricane might not make landfall, and it might, you know, it might save a bunch of lives. Now, this is what's interesting about it. I don't know if you know much about this, but Trump, believe it or not, this might be crazy to you, but Trump is not the first to suggest that potentially a nuclear warhead could disrupt a hurricane. It goes all the way back to the 50s, and in Dwight D. Eisenhower's presidency, one of his advisors felt that it might be a possible tactic to nuke a hurricane.
I think that, like, in the 1950s, like, nuclear warheads are still such a new concept that I could get it, but not in 2019. No, not 2019.
So hurricanes were also a very new concept in the 1950s. They didn't start happening. No, I'm kidding. So he suggests, then he kind of walked it back today saying, no, I don't know who said that. They're obviously lying, because when it doesn't look good for Trump, Trump just says everybody's lying. It's fake news. He did say that too. He literally said it was fake news. But what the people who were in that closed door meeting said, no, we heard it. Because there's nothing like putting nuclear radiation into the trade winds. That's sounds like a great, great idea. That was one of his ideas for climate. He also said at the G7 summit, he said that he is an environmentalist and he probably cares more about the environment than most people do.
Trump said this?
He sure did.
He's a fucking liar, and we all knew that.
Yes, but I mean, can you imagine that he said that he is an environmentalist, and he is probably, he knows a lot about the environment too. He said that as well. He also said today that he had heard that Putin was a very good guy when it came to the G8, when it was a G8. And that, a lot of people said that it was too bad he was gone because he was a really good part of the G8. And then went on to also say that Obama, it was embarrassing for Obama what happened in Crimean Peninsula, because obviously when Russia invaded Ukraine, and everybody's sitting there going, well, it was Putin that let that happen, not Obama. Obama wasn't the ruler of Ukraine. Or Russia. So yeah, he had a lot of interesting things to say today at the G7 summit. We also saw the memes of Melania's face light up when she saw Justin Trudeau. And then we've had people put a taco over Justin Trudeau's face, and that's become a really big thing today because that's life in 2019. But the sad part that has been happening the past couple weeks is that the literal lungs of our earth are on fire right now in the Amazon, and there's so much that we can't even start to get into it onto this, you know, we'd be here for 2 or 3 hours discussing all the ins and outs of it, but there have been a lot of terrible images coming from South America, And people I still don't think up here, including myself, by the way, don't fully understand all the ins and outs of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sorry. Could you repeat the question? Because I was busy doing something online that was not... Well, it was related to the rainforest.
That's what I was, yeah. It was the rainforest. I think there's so many ins and outs. Like I said, we don't have, we could never cover all of it in this time. But there are so many ins and outs. I've read a lot about it, and you still don't know all the ins and outs because some people don't understand that there is also, you know, we see the wildfires in California and Washington, and I think some people think that's what's happening down. They don't realize that this is. That there's a part of this as well, which is essentially trying to you hate to use that term, but essentially to get rid of the indigenous people of that region as well. This is very, very serious. Very serious.
And Bolsonaro is sending troops has agreed to send troops in to the rainforest to try and contain the fires, or at least he says he's going to try to contain the fires, despite the fact that we know that he has said multiple times that he wants to wipe out indigenous people. Like, he has openly said, like, he wants to commit genocide, and now we're sending troops towards where indigenous people live, and...
Which makes it even more scary to think about what could be possibly happening as we move ahead here. You know, it also reignites the debate about, of course, you know, the reason why they leveled the rainforest down there is, or a good portion of it, I believe it's up to 91%, but other statistics have it around 70% or whatever, but is the dependence on beef here in North America.
Yeah, and across the world, like there's growing markets for beef in Asia, and that's something that I've been concerned about for a while. Like, we could advocate for veganism in like the U.S. all we want, but I think that the meat industry is just going to do what the cigarette industry does and carve out new markets for themselves in other places. I mean, like, historically, India has been like, what, more than 70% vegetarian, and cows have been considered sacred, but beef eating is on the rise there because of.
Jeez, really.
Yeah, in Japan too, which historically has not had any beef because it's a fucking
archipelago.
Okay, island nation. Oh my god, sorry, my pet rat just grabbed my toe. Okay, hi.
You're having a great time with the critters tonight.
So many animals on my legs, guys. Anyway, historically hasn't had beef eating. It's been like mostly vegetables, rice, and seafood, but like beef eating is on the rise there. Because of propaganda from the meat industry, because they've been pushing their products into these new markets to continue making a profit, even as in America, the smoking is trending downwards and meat eating is trending downwards. It's just infuriating.
It really is. And the concept is that basically the people who are part of the meat lobby, part of the cigarette lobby, or nicotine lobby or tobacco lobby, I should say, that they don't care because it doesn't affect, in the case of tobacco, it doesn't affect their lives if they're not smoking. And in the case of this, it doesn't matter because they will be dead long before the world ends. Right. So as long as they have money, it's interesting because when you think about, here in the United States, I have noticed that, you know, and that might fade. We see those things fade sometimes, but right now there is a consciousness about, oh gosh, we need to lower our dependence on beef. I've heard several people say, hey, you know, I'm not a vegetarian. I still have chicken or seafood, but I definitely tried to lower my dependence on beef because that's one of the major culprits. And that's good. Of course, you and I would love to hear it be, you know, more along the plant-based line. That's good to hear, at least, that people are seeing these things and going, hey, we need to lower our dependence. And, you know, if you're talking about fast food, we've talked about how last week Impossible Burger is now Burger King. They're going to be introducing a full bucket of vegan fried chicken at KFC this week.
Seriously?
Yeah, absolutely, in Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia. And they're going to see how it goes there and then go from there. And so there are so many things changing in this country, and it might not be everybody turning to vegan, but they're definitely lowering their dependence on beef and meat. And but no, you're exactly right. And to think that a country like India, would be moving toward eating more beef is incredible to me, considering that even the I'm not saying everybody, obviously we know that there are both Muslim and Hindu people in India. But like the people I know from India who even are not like strongly practicing Hindu, they still will not eat beef, you know, or I mean, because they still believe, you know, that obviously it's, you know, that cows are sacred. And so to hear that means to tell me that the meat lobby or the beef lobby in this case is definitely really getting into the heads of probably the youth, if we're being honest. Because, you know, especially as, because even though I'm definitely a proponent of people getting away from organized religion, that is a trend you're seeing happen around the world in many different religions. And that actually bodes well for the meat industry in this case, because if there are younger people in India who are going away from their Hindu beliefs, suddenly it's not such a big deal to be eating beef, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, I only have so many friends here that can, you know, they would know more than I do, but that does seem like something that would work to the advantage of the meat industry. But yeah, so, but it's really, really sad. The pictures are horrifying. I do laugh because I'm always a fan of sharing the right stuff, right? But I saw a few people like, you do know a few of those pictures that are being tossed around are from 2013 and 2000, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, so it just means that we're just hearing about the Amazon being on fire now, but that this sort of shit has been going on for years and years. Like, okay, we get it that they're being shared in the wrong context maybe, but it doesn't make the situation any different.
Yeah.
What's going on down there. And some of the pictures that they were showing, I forget the exact city, but I mean, it was like it reminded me of a bit of what was going on in Canada last year, where, you know, some of the interior British Columbia towns, there was no daylight. There's no daylight. That's how much smoke and fire there is. So,
do you want to know what I was distracted by earlier when we started talking about the rainforest?
Go for it. Yeah.
So when I was a kid, I was obviously like very into like the environment and shit. I've talked a little bit before about how I've single-handedly saved the manatees. And about how I was very concerned about acid rain. Yes. And also, I was so concerned. Apparently, also, I found out on Twitter, I don't know if this is actually true because it was on Twitter, apparently, like, the reason we don't hear much about acid rain anymore is because we fixed it. Not really, but, like we've, like, significantly mitigated the problem of acid rain through United International Action. So that was great. Anyways.
There you go.
Much like the way we saved the ozone layer. But, The other thing I was really into was like saving the rainforest, because I was extremely concerned about the rainforest when I was like 10, and obviously I still am today. But there was like a website that I went onto, and I would like, it was like a website where like all of the products were supposed to go towards rainforest conservation. So I would like go onto this website, and I was like constantly looking at all the products and like also like learning about all the issues there. And so I just like had like we were, like all the talk about the rainforest lately has had me hit with these, like, I don't know if nostalgia is the right word, like the same way that people like feel like nostalgic about like Neopets, where it's like, oh, I spent so much time on this website as a child. That's kind of how I feel about this website.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna say, I was just trying to find out what it was, and I managed to figure out what it's called. And I also found in the Wayback Machine, like the Internet Archive, I managed to find out what the site looked like in 2012, which is probably like a little bit later. Like, it's probably around the time that I was like not doing it anymore, but it's still like similar to what it was like when I saw. So I'm going to send you the link to that.
Okay, got it. Yeah, it's kind of funny, because when I was a kid, we used to have, and of course now would not go with my veganism, but when I was a kid, you used to have what they called environments, and they were chocolates that was, you know, that they were to raise awareness for endangered species, and you would open them up and you'd eat the chocolate. But, you know, of course, as a kid, what you were excited about was that they'd have a little like card inside of them that would have a endangered species on them. And
like as a little kid, of course, you like eat the chocolate, but what you're excited about as a kid is the little card of information about endangered species. Which is definitely not like, that's definitely like a normal kid thing and not like a Brandon nerd thing.
That was like, it was like me going, like when I would get my allowance, and that, this is really cool, by the way, this the link that you sent.
I have no idea how legit this is, by the way. The site I'm looking at is called therainforestsite.greatergood.com. Right. I have no idea how legit this is. This could be like a total scam or something. But like I just spent a lot of time there as a kid. Like, so you can go to therainforestsite.greatergood.com.
I'll try to get it in the description as well.
Yeah, sure. I have, again, like, I mean, maybe not, because I don't, if it's, like, not, like, a legit thing, like, I was, when I was a kid, I didn't know how to, like, properly assess, like, how legit a charity was.
Right. No, that's true. Yeah, I guess people can go check it out for themselves if they watch. But anyways, yeah, no, it was interesting, because when I was a kid, too, and here we're going into down the nostalgia route. I remember when I was, yeah, so I was saying before I looked at that, yeah, you get my allowance, and there was this place called Natural Wonders in the mall, and that's where I would go to spend my allowance, where other kids, I don't know where they were going, and they would have all these stuff, like, you know, these like endangered species stuff, and yeah.
So. Also, like, on the Wayback Machine, like, or on the Internet Archive, at least in 2012, there's a statement on the front page that says, each item you buy preserves at least 1,145 square feet of rainforest land. That's fucking bullshit. Like, you can't just, like, buy this Guatemalan Worry No More doll and then, like, save more than 1,000 square feet of rainforest land.
It's, like, a bit much.
It seems like a bit much. And also, like, not if fucking Bolsonaro has anything to say about it.
Yeah. But, you know, something that, of course, is not going to be all the help we need, but we've mentioned this place before on the podcast, but a place that does plant trees, and, of course, right now, they believe they have any or at least not in the area of Brazil right now. But 10tree.com does, when you buy stuff off of their website, they do plant 10 trees in spaces that are good for the environment, both waterways and food for people in the area, mangroves and that sort of thing in Africa, North America, and whatnot. So that is a good place if you're wanting to at least try to counterbalance. Of course, we'll never be able to counterbalance the amount of trees we're losing right now down in Brazil.
And probably people and species.
And yeah, absolutely. And but at least you know, there are places out there who are trying to at least do good in that regard. You know, the thing that we're forgetting too, and this is not to distract by the absolute humanitarian crisis that's going on down in South America right now, we also forget that Alaska's on fire right now and parts of the tundra are on fire right now. These are places that there are places in northern Canada and the territories in northern Canada where there are tons of forests as well that have been untouched, and now they're on fire. So that's another something too. When we talk about these places that have been untouched, whether it be in South America or in very far North America, you know, I don't think people understand that this is what we breathe. You know, the trees are so vital to our oxygen levels here on Earth. And it does scare me to think that it's burning at a very rapid pace right now. And of course, it's kind of different for us right now on the West Coast this year, because we're used to seeing smoke around this time of year. And I don't know about you down in LA, but Washington, it's the first time in probably 5-6 years, I don't know, where we haven't had smoke through all of August, you know, and waking up to smoke and not seeing the sun because there's smoke. And the West Coast got off easy this year. But now you see to way north of us and way south of us, there's so much burning. And Siberia is burning, by the way, as well. And
what the interesting weather event that happened in California was, you just got like an uncharacteristic amount of rain.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything's so topsy-turvy.
It's so weird. And I, you know, of course, we can only take so much of the grain of salt, right? Because who can even predict what next week's going to be like with the weather? But the NOAA listed, and that won't bode very well for next year. The NOAA said that the West Coast is going to be warm, and Washington, of course, will have its wet times. We always do. But it's going to be warmer and drier throughout the end of this year on the West Coast, and perhaps into the spring as well. So that could mean bad news for us come next summer. Obviously, we had a lot of rain, like you're talking about, or, you know, California even having uncharacteristically wet spring and winter, which has helped out with fires, which is great because we needed the help here, a huge amount of help here on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. But who knows, with the fact that now, you know, the prediction is a warmer and drier winter here on the West Coast. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh man, so much stuff going on. And, But yeah, like I said, you know, I mean, when you look at the way things are going with plant-based foods and such, like, I mean, it's nice to see things sort of changing here in North America. But it is, when you do bring up the other parts of the world, it is a little bit, it does feel like you're fighting this uphill battle, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, like, and that's part of the reason, like, my younger brother was a public policy and health major with a focus on environmental studies. He actually has an internship in Washington, D.C. to talk about environmental policy. And he's very optimistic about, like, Bernie and Warren and about, like, the Green New Deal. And a part of me thinks, like, it doesn't fucking matter. Like, I basically, like, personally just sort of accepted the fact that the apocalypse is going to happen.
Yeah, no, I totally feel you there. I mean, it sounds dramatic, but no, that's, I'm totally with you. And because I got to ask you a question, right? Because for me, and this is not, by the way, you know, I think your brothers are great, by the way. So this is not like trying to, you know, but I have a question for you because you're a vegan and your brothers are not, right?
Well, my younger brother, George, is transitioning towards vegetarianism. When I was home, he was almost entirely vegetarian the whole time. So, and like, that's because he like was studying environmental policy, which is not, I like legitimately like would never, I like, that's not something I ever saw coming. And I'm not, I was very like, I didn't give him like any like big praise for
right.
it.
Right.
Because like,
yeah, no, I totally feel you there.
Yeah, because it's like, there've been so, because I don't want to invest emotionally in his like vegetarian journey.
100% agree.
Every time I have in the past, like, anytime he's like asked me questions or like he's like said expressed curiosity, like I've like dumped a ton of resources on him, and then he's like, actually no, never mind, me tastes
exactly
too good.
No, like, yeah,
I don't want to invest emotionally. Like, if he is going to go on this journey, he can do it on his fucking own.
Yeah, no, I totally. And by the way, I love George's Twitter, and so big fan of George. But the question I have for you is, do you ever hear not just your brothers, but other people who say they're very environmental? And is it hard? Because of course we know that like veganism alone is not going to save the planet. Okay, I'm not so, you know, virtuous as to believe that. But does it ever, when you see somebody who is not changing their diet at all, does it ever make you go and they say, oh, but I'm an environmentalist, I care a lot about the environment, does it ever make you want to pull out your hair and go, but you don't get it? I mean, how do you feel when you see that?
I mean, like, a part of it just feels like, it's just, like, one of the, it's just the sort of thing that sort of, like, over time just sort of reinforces my idea that, like, we're all gonna die, you know, because, like, even
if, yeah, exactly.
Like, at least claim to care the most about the environment aren't willing to make those changes, and, like, I've said it before on the show, like, even though individual action and individual lifestyle change alone can't save the world, like, it's going to take, like, a large political shift, but that's going to have to be pushed by a large cultural shift, and, like, culture changes by individual actions, right. And individual, like, beliefs and, like the way we work together. So individual action, like, has a very strong role to play, and, like, even if, like, I always feel like even if the people who at least claim to care about, like, the environment aren't willing to take that individual action, it's just like, well, there's no hope, you know?
Yeah, it's very.
I just feel like, yeah, disappointed.
Yeah, no, actually, I'm right there with you. And you know, it is interesting. There are things that are hopeful. For instance, I have a friend on Facebook. Well, I mean, we're actually friends in real life too. but I see him post a lot on Facebook. He's very progressive, very environmental, but he was always like a big time one of those people who, you know, put that draw the line. Where you know, PETA puts that picture up where they have like the rabbit and the kitten and the dog and the horse and the cow and the pig and the chicken, right? And they say, where do you draw the line? And he was like, you know, he'd be like right before puppy. And but everything else is fair game. And you know, and so, but yet now suddenly he start, and I'm just like you, I don't invest myself in their, you know, change and whatever, because I'll like, you know, if they ask me stuff, I'll like kind of, you know, tell them stuff about stuff I like to eat or stuff like that, but I don't invest myself. But so for instance, today, and he's a great guy and I've known him for a long time. But today he's talking about how, you know, he's really excited because Impossible Burger is coming to grocery stores. He loves Impossible Burger. He's even loves Beyond Burger. And I told him, well, hey, Beyond Burger has a new recipe, you know, and it's incredible. I just had it this past week. and that's even better than the original recipe. And he's like, I am so excited because he said, you know, because I was like, yeah, I said, dude, so back when I started eating, you know, vegetarian, I said, all there was Boca, and now we've got this stuff. It's amazing. And he's like, yeah, he goes, I always wanted to eat without guilt. And like Boca didn't do it for me. And, you know, I know for me, like, I didn't care. I did what I had to back then because I didn't want to eat meat. But I get that there are a lot of people like that, you know. And he was like, Boca didn't do it for me. Couldn't do it. He goes, now it's like that I have Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods. He goes, like, now I can finally eat guilt-free. So that shows you that even people who posted certain things and had certain feelings about stuff, there is guilt there.
Yeah.
And, you know, and now they're finding their alternatives, that's surfacing. And they're going, oh, wow, this is great. I get to eat this stuff and not feel guilty about it. So there is stuff that will change. But I also know where you're coming from. And I feel the same way you do, which is, one, seeing what's happening around the globe. And two, knowing that you go, so many people are not going to be willing to do to create this cultural shift that will then create the bigger political change. And you do sit there and you go, how much, by the time we get to be 80, 90, 100, if we make it that far, what will this world look like when we get there? And it can be very depressing to think about.
Mm.
Yeah. How can we end this on a bright note?
Well, I'm sure the fires on the Amazon are pretty bright.
Yeah, well, okay, yeah, I mean, on a brighter, happier note, how can we end this on a, so I'm going to just say that I am excited for the debates here coming up in a few weeks. We might have a much, like we talked about, much smaller group. What do you have coming up? Let's talk about your podcast before we go. How's that going? I know you have a new episode out this week.
I had a mini episode out last week, and as soon as we're done talking today, I've got to go do as much as I can to finish the next one. Because I won't have any time to do it tomorrow. but yeah, my podcast is called Dibs, Welcome to the Family. It's a show about people who are conceived via sperm and egg donation and the way our culture's understanding of family and identity continues to evolve, it's a little wordy is my description. But yeah, it's called Dibs, Welcome to the Family. It's pretty good. I like to think so. Also, fun fact, this is a pretty happy note, but my half-sister, my dibbling Julia, worked with the BBC to make a documentary about us. I could actually send you the link, and if you want to post it, you can. But sure. There's a short 8-minute version that's like easily shareable on Facebook, and then there's a longer 23-minute version, I think. And George is featured very heavily in the documentary. I am not. I am in the documentary, but very briefly. And you will, unless you know what you're looking for, you won't know it's me. yeah, so that it's like a story about finding our donor siblings, people who are conceived via the same sperm donor, and getting connected.
We'll make sure that we put the link in the description. Is it YouTube link? You said that's the full version?
It's on the BBC website.
BBC website. Okay, if you send that to me, I'll make sure it's in the description. And as for me, this week on the Lemonade Magazine podcast, my music podcast, Teddy Gold, who, by the way, her latest EP, there's a lot of social commentary in her music, but it's with these bright, sparkly, almost synth video game sounds in some of her songs. And she's great. I interviewed her this week. So if you go to Lemonade Magazine, my podcast there, you can listen to her interview as well as her new song, Cash, which is about wealth inequality. And you can hear other new music on that podcast as well. As always, thank you so much for joining us on our little podcast here called The Conservationist Conversationalist. You can listen to us on Podcoin, and which you can earn extra Podcoins there if you like, or on anywhere else you can listen to podcasts, any other your favorite podcast apps. And until next time, I bid you adieu. Stay dope.